Hello, Harry, and hello, everyone. Welcome back to Between Realities. Welcome to episode 8 of Between Realities. My name's Alex. We've already introduced ourselves. This is Skiva, aka Harry, and we are super excited to be here live on YouTube, ready to talk about virtual reality and all of the amazing things that surround that world. How's it going, dude? This is our first remote episode. Could you tell, people? This is our first remote episode. We decided to practice the social distancing, and try to be cool about it while things are getting hot. So I'm at my place, Steve is at his place, and we have one person waiting in the wings at their place joining us today. This gentleman is a dude who we met in San Francisco at VRX 2019. It's a enterprise-focused VR conference, and we were just standing around, and we just got to chatting with this guy, and we had an amazing conversation. We talked in depth about a lot of like science fictiony VR stuff, yep. And about like data and privacy and all of that. And we knew that we needed to have him join us for the show once we got it up and running. Between Realities wasn't even started yet, and we were like, "We're gonna do a podcast, and you're gonna be on." So he's an alumni of UC Berkeley. He is the application accessibility group lead for XR Access. Specializing in accessibility of XR applications for people who are disabled. Please welcome to Between Realities, Mr. Dylan Fox.
How you doing,
hey,
Dylan?
Happy to be here.
All right.
Hello,
good to have
dude.
You, man.
Thank you for joining us, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, dude.
We're episode eight, episode deep in the podcast. So what were you doing at VRX? Why were you at this VR conference? Well, I was volunteering there just as a way to stay on top of the rapidly shifting world of VR. I brought in a couple of folks as well from the extended reality at Berkeley, their undergraduate VR club, and just wanted to meet some of the brilliant minds that are exploring this new medium.
I love it. Basically, we were trying to get footage of everything. Make some YouTube videos and meet some industry professionals like yourself and make some relationships. I would say it was a pretty good overall conference to do that in, wouldn't you say? Yeah, for sure, man.
It was great. It was a really good conference. There was a lot of good people to talk to and a lot of good things to see, a lot of good tech to try. It was just a really cool time.
So Dylan,
we got an audio loop going on here.
I was wondering if it would be me. Hopefully that helps out a little bit. I can probably lose a little bit of volume here. Let us know what happens, everybody.
The audio sync part, I'm not sure I can hear feed from both audio loopage. Yeah, might be. So Alex isn't wearing a headset. We didn't have the cable. We're doing this live.
Yeah, it's like a legit loop. The whole chunk of audio is coming in twice, actually.
I'm loop.
Oh, interesting.
That's what happens when you broadcast what happens.
Yeah. Hey, Alex, can you mute for a second just to see if it goes away?
Yep.
Give me a second here. Sorry about the technical difficulties.
First time remote.
There's always the snafus, right? Especially these days with everyone and anyone on the internet eating up all the bandwidth.
For sure. All right. So is there still a loop? Alright, it doesn't echo. Oh, okay. So it might be. So is it? I think it's good now, right? There's like a. It's hard to talk to people real time because there's like a 20-second delay or something like that. But so I'm thinking that might solve the problem. Alex, we might just have to. You're muted. Yeah, I can't hear you at all. So might just have to. I don't know. Mute.
I'm back. Okay. I'm back.
Okay.
What's up?
Interesting. All right.
Let's take a listen here.
Thanks for your patience, people. Thanks for your patience, people.
This is what happens when you're a total noob at doing live broadcasting like us.
Yeah, so we tried, you know, everything in our headset sounds good. So it's one of those things you can only tell on the live stream. So. But anyway,
so I'm definitely coming through twice.
You might have another microphone, maybe from your headset or something plugged in that's coming through as well.
No, it's the same audio coming through twice. It might be me being broadcast on Skype, because we have multiple calls going, and it could possibly be an issue.
So why don't you guys talk a little, and I'm going to try to figure it out in the background.
Well, I'm echoing like crazy.
All right, Dylan, why don't you tell us a little bit?
Sounds like I am too.
Well, Dylan, why don't you tell us while I try to figure this out? Why don't you tell us what you've been up to lately with what you do?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So mostly lately, I've been attending a couple of conferences. I went to the CSUN Assistive Technology Conference, and then last week to the IEEE VR conference. Again, just trying to kind of keep abreast of what's happening. Also, because I'm working with, as you mentioned, XR Access, which is a group about trying to make virtual augmented mixed reality accessible to people with disabilities. And so one of the things we've been trying to evaluate is when it comes to VR conferences, things like VR Chat and AltSpace and Mozilla Hubs, and the whole mix of systems that was used to make the IEEE conference fully remote. How accessible are those? And, you know, especially if we wanted to hold a virtual conference on accessibility, would the people that we're representing be able to actually attend and participate? So try to evaluate that. Wow. We're trying to get out a big survey of not only VR for consumer purposes, but for enterprise purposes, where the kind of accessibility barriers there, and just understanding what needs to happen to make sure that everybody can have access to this kind of amazing new technology.
So that's super, super interesting, because I, like, honestly, as somebody who, you know, can see or can hear or whatever and has all my senses working as far as I can tell, I like never really thought about what it might be like for someone to enter VR or AR if they were missing one of these like critical sensory perception inputs that kind of build the experience. What does VR or AR look like for someone who can't see, or how can someone benefit from VR or AR if they're blind?
Mm-hmm. I think the first thing to keep in mind is that disability isn't this kind of binary, either you have sight or you don't, you have hearing or you don't. It's a spectrum, right? So there are people with various levels and various types of visual disabilities, of hearing, of cognitive, and of motor disabilities. And that's not only people that, you know, were blind, are blind from birth or permanently blind. There's people that, you know, maybe they lost their glasses. Maybe they, just had something else that temporarily lowers their vision. similarly for motor, and let me turn off my my phone notification sound. Sorry about that. for motor disabilities, right? Like, it might be that you only have one hand. It might be that one of your controllers ran out of battery. And in fact, for Alchemy Labs, that's exactly what happened. They were playtesting. One of their controllers ran out of battery, and they said, "Oh well, I guess it's not going to work until we fix get some new batteries." Well, hold on. Shouldn't it work if it only has if you only have one controller? Shouldn't it work if you only have one hand? And so, anything that you do to improve the experience for people with you know, partial or full disabilities helps. It helps everyone because everybody has times when they either from medical reasons or just from circumstance don't have access to one or more of their normal abilities.
So you mentioned earlier that like maybe like I forgot my glasses. Are you saying that like we can program in vision correction into a VR AR display?
Yeah, no, there's actually a couple of interesting ways of going about that. There's a paper called Microsoft Seeing VR that is basically, you can almost think about it like magical bifocals, where you can set up VR to have things like a magnification window, contrast enhancement, color adjustment. There's a lot of different techniques that you can use to help people with limited visibility see things in VR more clearly. And if that's something that you're thinking about when you're designing and developing your game and you include it from the get-go, it's a lot easier than if you go through the whole, you know, development cycle and then figure out, oh yeah, we should probably try to add some accessibility features.
Wow, that's amazing.
Interesting. Does the group of people who are and what's the best way to describe this group of people? I don't want to say a group of people who are disabled.
I think that's okay. This is something that, you know, I'm not perfect at. I identify as able. I don't have any, you know, disabilities. So, you know, with this, it's just always important to talk to the community about it. The main thing is refer to folks as, oh, those are disabled, right?
Right.
You want to say people with disabilities. Don't take the person aspect out of it.
So as long as you do that, you're
usually okay.
So does the group of people with disabilities represent a large enough chunk of all gamers to include accessibility as a smart business decision, or do you think that it's included almost as like a goodwill kind of thing?
I think it's absolutely a smart business decision. I think that's for a couple of reasons. First is that, you know, the VR market is already pretty small. It's growing steadily, but there's no good reason to exclude anybody from that market, right? Especially when pretty much any feature you put in is going to be making that game accessible to a new group of potential buyers. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of it. The other part is... partially for gaming, but also there's a lot of areas of technology where in order for, you know, governments to buy it, for schools to buy it, for healthcare providers to buy it, it has to be accessible, right? There's 504 laws, there's a couple of disability laws, and making it accessible to everybody is going to make sure that you can sell it to anybody and also is going to improve the experience for everybody as well. Like, for example, in Half-Life Alyx, you know, one of the most vaunted features I've heard and talked about, I haven't played it myself, I really want to, but soon, is the ability to just, you know, grab something with your, what is it, the gravity? The
gravity gloves?
Gravity gloves.
Or the Russells?
To just suck it into your hand, right? And that type of capability is actually something in similar games I've seen... that you started out as an accessibility feature where they realized, hey, this person doesn't have the motor range to like reach all the way down to the ground and pick something up. Mm-hmm. But if you just give them the ability to suck it into their hand, then not only does that solve that problem for them, it improves the experience for everybody.
Yeah, and you're right. It does improve it for everyone. It solves it for them, and it makes me feel great, and it gives them that same feeling that I get as somebody who is able-bodied. Danny Henkley in the chat says, as someone who got the adaptive controller from Microsoft because my hands don't work, it made me think so much more highly of Microsoft.
Yeah, the adaptive controller is a great example. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I would love to see for VR, right? A lot of VR games right now don't accept many kinds of inputs. They don't accept being able to plug in, like the adaptive controller offers, plug in different kinds of things into a Switch and be able to use your own, whatever you can operate to operate it rather than the buttons that are on the controller.
Right. VR is a whole different beast. You know, you can't just remap inputs from a different gamepad or something like you can for a flat game. You know, like there's so many things that go into it. I don't know what they are, but there's a lot of shit that goes into that.
It's true, but you would also be surprised. There's what is it? I think it's called a plugin called Walk-In VR Driver. And one of the things that you could do for that is you know, in one of the accessibility features for that you see often on touchscreens is, you know, there's a question of, okay, I could theoretically touch anywhere on the screen. How do I choose where to touch, right? If I can't actually move my hand that way. One of the things you can do is have this thing moving from side to side, and you hit it once, and it selects that kind of row, essentially, and then it starts moving up and down, and you hit it again, and it selects that that column. You could do that for VR as well. It just takes three clicks instead of two. And maybe another three clicks to choose like your orientation, another three clicks.
Like the depth, the height. Right. Yeah.
So, you know, obviously for things where timing is a huge issue, you know, maybe for like super action games that might not be feasible, but there's a whole ton of games and experiences where having something like that, if we could just build in something like that, it may be invisible to the majority of users, but it suddenly opens up that application or experience to a whole new group of people.
That's pretty amazing. And you know, just having gone through Half-Life Alyx, there's a one-handed mode. And I found that to be very interesting. I don't remember seeing that in any other game I've played. And, you know, granted, I haven't been looking really, but yeah, I just thought that was really, really cool that they were able to do that.
Yeah.
I wonder if they let you pocket stuff like in the other hand still, like if there's like a floating like thing that you can like put your second, yeah, you know, fill your second pocket. So.
They put a lot of thought into their stuff as we've seen, right, with that game. And, you know, this you might know, be a good way to segment in to talking a little bit of Half-Life Alyx real quick.
You just took it right out of my brain, didn't you?
This game, man, wow. Yeah.
Keep hearing just amazing. We're gonna
no spoilers. We won't talk about any spoilers.
No spoilers here, people. I'm like so anti-spoiler. Yeah. It's not even funny. Yeah. This is definitely a new benchmark for immersive entertainment. Just period. Just immersive entertainment. Like you can call it a game if you want, but you are living and breathing that shit while you are in there. You know, like I've heard stories of people like spending a lot of time like in rooms stacking stuff and playing with the physics, which I totally get. But for me, I was like, I was living and breathing Alyx. Like dude, are you kidding me? I don't have time to stack shit. Like I am on a mission right now, you know? And like, it like got me like, with like little jump scares here and there, and just like it was so immersive and exciting and good, and like probably the best game ever. Like, is there a better game out there?
That's a really good question. I don't know that there is, right? They, you know, every time Valve comes into the scene with a Half-Life game, they just take everything and they show you how far you can push it, right? I mean, if you had told me that there could be a game with everything that you see that you should be able to interact with, you can, you know, there's, you know, you, when you walk up to shelves and stuff, they're populated with all kinds of things that you can push out of the way. And to have, here's the killer though, to have it run at a buttery smooth 120 hertz on my Valve Index, like, wow, not only did they get the world right, right, and make it the most immersive looking world that you've ever seen, but they made it perform really well. Really well.
You know, that's a really good point, because as VR gamers, you know, we know how temperamental it must be to develop a VR game. You know, we hear it from developers all the time that like this is not an easy task to make a VR game that is smooth, looks good, runs the way it's supposed to, and does everything the way it's supposed to. And Half-Life Alyx isn't perfect. It has its, you know, things, and they're patching it quick, by the way, like really quick. I had a bug that they patched like the day after I reported it, which is amazing. But it makes those like moments when that thing does go wrong where like it's kind of weird. It's like, wait, what the fuck is this? Like, you're so used to the world just like clicking and working perfectly that it's almost like, it's like, whoa, hold on, that's not supposed to happen. But in any other game, you might see 100 of those in throughout just the span that you play it. You know what I mean? So they really are setting a new benchmark where there's going to be a lot of people who play Half-Life Alyx, and that's their first VR experience.
I can't imagine.
They can't go. Wow. They can't go and play anything else. Yeah. You know, like nothing is going to stand up to that.
This is true.
Yeah. No, I will give super kudos to everybody at Valve, just because the amount of effort it takes to iron out all those bugs, which, you know, in another game, like you said, in a 2D game, you just ignore them, right? It's just, oh, reload, do it again, whatever. In a game, in a format like VR, where the immersion is such an important aspect of it, and a visual bug doesn't just mean that, you know, you might discourage the player, it might make them throw up, right?
Right.
It can, in the worst case, it can cause nausea and all kinds of like physical reactions. It's so important to get that right. And everything I've heard tells me that from a technical standpoint, it's a masterpiece.
It is amazing. Rescue Toaster in the chat asks, is anything lost through the quest with Link? And comfort, I think, is primary.
Yeah.
Like, the quest with Link, you know, the quest on your head is not nearly as comfortable as, like, a PC VR headset. Sure. Like, I played it on the quest with Link for my first day, and then the next day I went to the Vive Pro. Night and day. Like,
well, because really... the biggest thing, I think, is the refresh rate, right? So you got the Quest does 72 frames a second. You know, the Vive Pro does 90, and the Valve Index goes 120 and up to 144. So it's, you know, the more frames you have, the more you feel like you're in the world, right? You know, I went through and I played it on Quest with Link. I played it on Quest with Virtual Desktop, you know. But when I did my main playthrough, it was with the Valve Index. And I've seen most of the differences. And really, it's the sense of presence. You know what I mean? The sense of presence is with that really high frame rate really adds something super special to it. You know, obviously it's really nice having the Valve Index controllers. You know, you can do a lot of little things here and there that are really neat that kind of further your immersion. But at the same time, you're gonna have fun no matter what you play this on. Really. I mean,
that's the biggest thing to take away. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I finished it today, and of course, it was amazing. I loved it. Best game ever, for sure. And I did it with the Vive controllers, which if you've watched the previous episodes, you know that I was really worried about. And in the last show, I confirmed that there was no issue and that it is great. I didn't even think about my controllers while I was in there, but my Valve controllers are arriving tomorrow. Your index controllers,
yeah.
Yeah. My index controllers are arriving tomorrow. So I'm like super, super stoked to do another playthrough, but this time with the index controllers. And I think I'm going to make a video that's like Vive Pro controllers, Half-Life Alyx versus, you know, index controllers, Half-Life Alyx. Yeah. Is it worth the upgrade? $300 is a freaking steep price for a controller.
Yep. So playing on these old relics and the original Vive.
Nice. And you're gonna have a good time with it. You know, that's what Alyx used through the whole thing, those controllers. And we really, you know, we were both thinking, oh man, you know, because we've played some other games where they just don't work well. The touchpads just don't work well. And but from what Alyx has been saying, man, I mean, they really nailed it in. And leave it to Vive to make the controllers they designed. I'm sorry, leave it to Valve to, you know,
right,
for the controllers that they designed to work perfectly in their game. So, but yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I should hope so.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dylan.
Oh, no, I was just saying the input devices, it's one of those things where, it can make just all the difference in the world, right? I don't know that they use finger tracking on the Alyx. You can tell me if I'm wrong, but
there is finger tracking.
For me, well, there you go. Mm-hmm. Both finger tracking, and I know a big one for me when I've tried out the newer controllers is the difference with the grip button between having to, like, you know,
yeah,
pinch like this and then let go and still hold on to it while you're flying around versus just having that be in your hand and just being let go without flinging your controller across the room.
That is really cool.
It's going to take me some serious getting used to, dude. Yeah. Like the handful of times I've used the Index controllers for anything other than Beat Saber at like an arcade or at Skeeva's house, I like kept forgetting that that's how you actually pick shit up and put shit down. It's like actually opening and closing your hand. So I'm definitely going to have a transition period, you know, moving from using the buttons to using the finger
Because there are no buttons as far as the grip is concerned. Your hand is either open or closed, you know, and then there's the ability to squeeze, right? Which is really cool. So, you know, one of the things you can do with the Index controllers that you know, that isn't quite as cool with the Oculus Touch controllers is, you know, squeezing a can and crushing it, for example, you know, where it's not just regular can, crushed can, like it crushes as you squeeze harder. You know what I mean? It's that kind of immersion. And it works really well. On the other hand, you know, they couldn't really make anything that was too groundbreaking with those controllers because it has to work with everything. You know, they had it working with all the controllers. So they couldn't say, you know, well, you can only do this with the Index controllers or whatever. But it was a great, great situation playing through that. And I'm on my second playthrough as well. And I'm trying to get, you know, there's this thing that they took from Left 4 Dead where you can carry a gnome, a lawn gnome from the beginning of the game, carry it all the way through to the very end. And you can't just put it in your inventory. It takes up one of your hands, which in VR is a big deal because you need that to reload. You can't just reload one-handed. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's really challenging.
Well, one of the things that really just made the hit me over the head was watching somebody's clip of Half-Life where they said, okay, well, we only have two inventory slots, but realistic physics. Yeah. So they took a box and they filled it with stuff and they would just carry it around with them. And, oh, coming up, let me set it down and go and shoot, and then pick it back up and carry on my way.
Yeah, I filled boxes with shit and carried them places because it was just easier than going to get things one at a time. I mean, yeah, it was absolutely, the physics are just mind-bogglingly good. Mind-boggling.
And there's so many ways to solve the problem at hand. Like Harry was watching me stream maybe yesterday or the day before, and I got to a scene where what I did was completely different than what he did to pass the section. Mm-hmm. But that's what this game gives you. It gives you the opportunity to just like be in there, and whatever you do, it's going to work. You know, like mm-hmm. it's not just what do they want me to do? It's like, what do I want to do? Mm-hmm. And that is beautiful.
Yeah,
it really is, man. They really made something special here. This is going to blow minds everywhere, all you know, across the world. And what a crazy time for it to come out too, right? Everyone's stuck at home. Now you got this amazing, amazing game to play. You know, I mean, if you can get your hands on a VR headset right now, which you know, kind of makes me happy to say it's hard to do. You know, because forever, no one, you know, everyone's like, VR. But now Half-Life Alyx and everyone's ears are standing up. So,
well, with good reason. Yeah. So I'm excited to go more into it in probably a couple more weeks or so. Once I've finished my second playthrough and Skeeva's mm-hmm. finished his second playthrough, we're going to like talk about it like for real.
Sure.
And there will be like a spoiler alert. Don't watch this episode shit if you haven't played the game. Yep. So we're going to give everybody a couple more weeks and then we're going to like talk Half-Life because this is my first like real look at the world of Half-Life. You know, I played with it as a kid, but this is like now I'm in and I'm like, I want to know more and who is that and what's this, and we're going to talk about all that stuff soon. Mm-hmm. So you can look forward to that.
Absolutely. So you know, on the note of Valve, we found it was very interesting that on the day that Half-Life released, there was some news that came out that HP is creating a new Reverb headset, which for those that don't know is the 4K by 4K, you know, per eye headset that they have. It's really a super high-end headset. But they came out and they said, we're also not just partnering with Microsoft on this, like they did with the last one with the Windows Mixed Reality stuff, but they said we're partnering with Valve as well. And that to me, I found very, very interesting, right? Like they're partnering with Valve. And, you know, looking at the picture, I have a feeling they're just licensing out their headphones I think. Well, I shouldn't even say headphones because they're off-ear speakers that are just phenomenal. Right. One of the best parts of the Index for sure. So I think that might be what it is, but I don't know. You know, it was just very interesting to see that HP is, you know, partnering with Microsoft, which is the WMR, but then Valve was put in there, and that was like, whoa, right?
Is this the first you're hearing of this, Dylan?
Yeah, no, this is news to me. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Like, I mean, in the best case scenario would be that, you know, you could have the inside out tracking and then flip a switch and go to Vive tracking, right? Like, you know, base station tracking. That would be amazing.
Oh, you know? Dude, that would be so good.
That would be, but, you know, yeah. I don't know. Is that, I don't know. You know, might not be a thing.
That would be awesome. Because then, like, if you had like an Alienware laptop that you run VR off of, like Rescue Toaster in the chat, mm-hmm. Then like you could have a VR station in your house, like with the base stations, right? And like that's the tracking that you use at home. Yep. But then you can take your shit to your buddy's house and use the inside out tracking there, and like still have that PC VR experience.
That would be so killer.
I think that would be amazing.
That would be killer. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see more and more kind of flexible VR systems, right? I think that's what made the Oculus Quest like a big kind of gateway device for a lot of people, is that you get that it hits that baseline of performance for most things that, you know, a lot of times the Samsung Gear or the Google Cardboard don't quite make it to. But you have such incredible flexibility to take it anywhere, mm-hmm. right? As opposed to, you know, I play my Vive and I love it and it's got a great experience, but I have a room that has been like specifically, I got out my screw gun and installed these base stations and I need to clear everything out. And it is like, okay, I'm going to dedicate, you know, 10 minutes to clearing the floor space of my office and then play here in this very circumscribed space. And I'm going to have absolutely no awareness of the outside world while I'm doing it. Right. I think the more we get to this place where I can hop into VR anywhere and not be totally blind, like have smart ways for the outside world to interrupt me, I think we're going to see more and more people get into VR, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. we're asking a ton of people when you say, okay, you can have this really fun experience, but you're going to make yourself incredibly vulnerable and incredibly, you know, just isolated from everything that isn't in here, mm-hmm. right?
Vulnerable is a good word. Yeah. I feel like people often don't want to make themselves vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Right. Especially, you know, I think when it comes to things like VRcades, I was really sad to hear the IMAX VR Center in Los Angeles closed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I went there and I was like, oh, this is amazing. But I think being in a public space, even if it's a public space set aside for VR, and just not knowing when there could be somebody right behind you, or sometimes when you're about to bang into a wall or, you know, kick somebody that accidentally wandered in the space, that's a very scary feeling for people to be immersed in something and then have this jarring, crashing realization that, oh, wait, hold on. What?
Plus, you know, a lot of people.
Have you done The Void, Dylan?
The Void? No, I've heard really good things.
It's pretty cool. Amazing. Like, if there's a wall, there's a wall. You know, like, it really solves that specific issue. Putting you in multiplayer in a VR space where you reach out and touch a wall and that wall's there, that is a really cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people also, I think, can feel self-conscious in a VR headset, too. Everyone thinks, oh, I look so silly. You know, everyone's gonna judge me. So, yeah, there's a lot of things that people don't like, you know, about VR. But
I don't know if you can see in here. Yeah. We put some googly eyes here. Nice. So looking silly is something that I've sacrificed.
Yeah, I am not self-conscious, not at this age.
Yeah.
You know, and one more thing I wanted to say about this headset too is that, you know, like the HP Reverb, it's this like super high-end headset, right? Like 4K per eye. We barely had the chance to try it when we were at VRX, actually, interestingly enough. Mm-hmm. But like, who else has tried it? Who as a consumer of VR has a HP Reverb sitting at home?
That's because it has WMR, right? It's Windows Mixed Reality, and it's the worst of all the tracking systems besides the PlayStation. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you're gonna go PC VR, it's hard.
A lot of times when I think of like Microsoft or what's the other company?
Valve.
HP. Oh, yeah. I'm not thinking about like consumer VR, but then you hear Valve.
Right.
And it's like, oh, okay, great. This is made for me, you know?
Yeah.
So I think Valve's being a part of that is going to be huge, because now, especially now that Alex has come out, because people are going to associate Valve with quality virtual reality. So mm-hmm. that headset's going to sell just because it has a Valve tag on it, if you ask me.
Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely see that for sure. They make good stuff. And if you put Valve's name on something, it means something. It really does.
Especially today.
Yeah, for sure. You know, one thing that we really need out of VR, to make it a lot better, a lot easier, a lot better on the systems that we're using to run this PC VR stuff is foveated rendering, right? And yeah. using eye tracking. And one of the stories that came up was that, and this I think this is absolutely huge, that NVIDIA figured out a way to do eye tracking without the use of cameras. Right, and that's pretty big. So they're using LEDs. So they have a couple of light emitting LEDs and a couple of light sensing LEDs, and through that they're able to accurately track your eye. Right, so that's huge, because the cost of that is so low. Right, that now we might actually see all the new headsets coming out with eye tracking, because you don't need to take the resources for two more cameras, right? And you got the XR2 chip, which is the next gen, you know, standalone headset chip that can support up to seven cameras. Well, two of those cameras were going to be dedicated to eye tracking, but are we going to need that anymore? Maybe not, right? I mean, it's a pretty big deal, I think. You know, being able to, maybe you can use those cameras now to track your body, track your facial expressions, who knows? But it leaves everything open now to some new and interesting stuff. And being able to produce eye tracking at such low cost, I think, is just going to be a big thing.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think that's going to be a big win for accessibility too. Just because one of the challenging things about VR, especially for people with lots of different kinds of motor disabilities, is it's so heavy on your head, and there's so much moving your head around and up and down and left and right to be able to see all the things that you need to see. Once we have eye tracking, a lot of that ergonomic strain can go away, and you can have a lot more kind of relaxed position, supported, you know, positions, and you're just using your eyes to make selections and to navigate and to interface the way you need to.
Yeah.
So I think that's big wins on multiple accounts for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I agree. I was actually, as soon as you started talking about that, I was like getting ready to like get your perspective from the accessibility perspective, because you know, if you're somebody who doesn't have the use of their hands, like Danny, for example, this could give you something to where like you could actually get good at shooting just by being good at looking the right way. You know, like your eyes, right. You can like get, that's like a whole new skill.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and I know even being able to do, for example, blinking as an alternate input, right? If I go like that, shoot. Now, boom, your game is accessible for people with you know, don't even have either hand, right?
Yeah, man.
It's the more kind of alternate inputs that you can allow people, the more accessible it becomes.
Yeah, that's really big. You know, I'd love to be able to see this working on all different kinds of accounts, and not just gazing at ads, but, you know, different ways to actually help people. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to see what happens with this whole thing. You know, I feel like this is a legit game changer in VR that not many people are really talking about. So yeah, but just to bang through these news stories, because we really want to talk to Dylan about some cool stuff. The next thing I wanted to talk about is there's this new program called HoloSwitch, right, which allows you to bring your phone into VR. Right, it's one of the problems I've always had is like I'm always like you miss things when you're in VR. Right, and sometimes important things. So it'd be really nice to have your text messages pop up in game. You know, if you get an important phone call, something like that. There, you know, they even have a mode where you can use the camera on your phone to be able to keep watch outside of your headset while you're playing. You can pin a little window, you know, of what your cameras, your phone's camera is seeing, which is really
that's cool.
Yeah, which is really cool. So you'll be able to interact with your phone, send texts and receive texts and calls, and not just those, but anything that has a notification system, I guess, they're really trying to be able to get to come through in VR.
You know, I have mixed feelings, honestly.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Being able to bring my phone into VR when I want it and like when it really makes sense would be fantastic. But I like played around with the idea of enabling notifications during my live streams of Alex, because at this point I don't have a huge audience or anything. So like I might play for 20 minutes, 30 minutes and not know that somebody popped into the chat trying to engage. Mm-hmm. So I was like, man, maybe I'll put on notifications so I can like hear when people come in. But then I was like, wait a second, that's going to be immersion breaking. Like, I don't want like dings happening like, you know, in succession every 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm like now thinking about these chat things rolling in when I should be like focusing on the game, or I want to be focusing on the game. Mm-hmm. So it almost seems like if I had that program, I could see myself just disabling it, being like, dude, fuck this. I'm in here. Like, you know, I don't want to be bothered.
Yeah. And someday, you know, for people that have kids, this is kind of big, you know, just there's so many reasons. Sure. There's so many reasons why there's times where, you know, you're going to need, you know, to communicate, and there's important things happening, and mm-hmm. putting things over your eyes and your ears and cutting yourself off from the real world, you know, can sometimes have consequences. So, this I think could be a really good thing.
It's a powerful tool. It is. Don't get me wrong. Yep. I'm just like speaking like, would I actually use that?
Sure. Yeah. And there's a lot
and
of
I'm
pros
just
and cons.
Not sure that I would.
Yeah. Yeah. There's pros and cons.
Yeah. I think it's definitely powerful, especially because, you know, for me, thinking about, I'm a UX designer. And when I think about VR, you know, half the time I'm in there, not for an immersive experience, but because I'm working on something, right? Mm-hmm. I could see this, at the very least for designers, developers, for the creators. This is an amazing advance in kind of collaboration tools, right? Being able to stay in the loop and not have to take off your headset and go back mm-hmm. to your keyboard, in order to check what's going on.
Right.
I think that's a huge win.
Or quickly respond to a text. Maybe somebody sends you a text and you can just launch one off really quick without ever having to pick up your phone.
Yeah. And the ability to, you know, definitely mute it when you want that super immersive cinematic experience. But, what if also if you're in like a social game and somebody's like, hey, we should join up, you know, hop on my server, hop on my Discord, whatever. Mm-hmm. I think the ability to reduce that feeling of isolation and of missing out that people get while they're in VR, because, you know, like it or not, we've definitely become attached at the hip to our smartphones.
True that.
For some people, you know, that's one of the obstacles to VR is like, well, what if I miss something? That's a whole separate conversation about whether that's healthy, that I took, you know, several sociology classes on. But, one interesting opportunity here is if games or experiences can build in ways so that not have that, you know, allow in notifications, allow in things from the outside world, but not necessarily as this just like out of place pop up that doesn't belong in the world. But let's say you have a billboard in your game, right? That, hey, you get something, you get a text and it pops up on that in the experience. Sure. Right?
Now you're speaking my language.
Or on a, or on a smartwatch.
Now you're speaking my language.
Right? You can look at the watch or
something. Or I'm at my virtual desk and like a post-it note comes floating down and I can grab it and it has the message written on it.
Well, because that's something that I've heard of in the context of advertising, right? Is how do you do in-game advertising without taking people out of the flow? And the answer is you don't force them to stop what they're doing and look at your ad. You make it part of that flow, part of that immersion, right? You put it on the side of cars or billboards or whatever, right? And if you can have that kind of infrastructure built in where, you know, depending on who's playing, they can, you know, pipe in whichever ad, well, why can't you kind of co-opt that and use it for text messages or other types of notifications?
Mm-hmm.
And that way you get the best of both worlds. You get that immersion and you get that information that you need from the outside world. At the risk, of course, of like maybe you don't notice it when you're in the middle of a firefight, but I think that's definitely something we'll see explored.
Danny Henkley says, I think that there could be like an indicator and there's something there, but you can choose when to look. So maybe like your wrist starts glowing, you know, mm-hmm. and you can like look at it when you're ready, but like now you know that there's something there, you know, be another way to kind of notify you without being immersion breaking or like big old pop up like like that program I use, OVR toolkit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. So that there's one other thing I wanted to get to on the news here, and that's mostly because Alex is stoked about this game called Iron Lights. right?
Yeah.
So, and this got a release date finally, which is great because we didn't know when it was coming out for a while, and that is April 9th. So I know what Alex will be doing on April 9th. But this is a really cool.
Yeah, you know.
And I'm gonna I do want to try it out too. It does look pretty dope. It does.
I honestly I got like the alpha version and I haven't played it yet because Half-Life Alyx came out. Yeah. You know, like that really has like if I'm playing VR, that's where I've been lately. Also, admittedly, Animal Crossing on the Switch has taken quite a bit of my time. It's extremely good. And I love Animal Crossing. So I've definitely been putting some hours into that too in my downtime. But my fiance also plays it, so it like, you know, provides an opportunity for us to connect while gaming, which doesn't always happen in relationships, so I take advantage of it when it's there. But Iron Lights looks super awesome. 1v1 real-time combat that kind of solves the issue of like the sword flailing, you know, like you can't just like get in there like Skyrim and just be like saw something down super fast because you're flicking your wrist. Like you really have to be strategic about where you put your blows. Mm-hmm. And it kind of is like this bouncing between attacking and defending. So you're either defending the attacks or you're coming in looking for openings. Kind of like fencing, but with different weapons and stuff. And this is actually going to be one of the things that I'm getting into this week now that I have completed Half-Life Alyx, if I can manage to stay out of there with the knuckles. So
good luck.
You know, but for the record, the guy E. McNeil is the name of the developer of Iron Lights, and I reached out to him being like, this game looks great, I would love to take it for a spin and talk about it, and he hooked me up with a code for Oculus and for Steam and was like super super cool. And I'm really excited for him because it looks like this will be a game that a lot of people will have the opportunity to kind of like get addicted to, mm-hmm. you know, because it's going to be on the Quest. So you can, there's so many Quest owners that don't have that let's go online together experience. And if you have a buddy who like you spar with all the time, like you guys could get in there and grind for hours, yeah. like working on strategies and all of that. So I think it's going to be I think it's going to be good. And I really hope that it develops a strong community.
That's really intriguing. How does it solve that issue of a lack of force feedback, right? Because that's always been the thing, you know, I've heard of when it comes to like lightsaber dueling, for example, right? Mm-hmm. You can't have that clash because you can't push on each other. Mm-hmm. So how does it solve that for melee combat?
You know, like I said, I haven't played it yet, so I can't really speak too much to it. But I don't know.
I think everything kind of happens in slow motion. Right, and one person defends while the other attacks, and the other attacks while the other defends. I think is how it works, right? And right. everything is
yeah. So it's not like we're both swinging and like ting ting. It's like I'm defending and you're looking for the openings, you know. So right. you'll probably get a haptic response in the controller. What would be really cool, E. McNeil, if you're listening, is maybe some haptic vest integration.
Ooh, yeah.
For yeah. The B haptics tac yep. suit. That could be dope because then I know if I get hit down here, I'll be like, ooh, that was here. Mm-hmm. And I'll be thinking about that and I can guard it down there. I think that would be a great game to get haptic integration for with the vest. So E. McNeil, hit up E. Haptics, figure out how to get that thing integrated. I bet you that would be dope.
That would be amazing. That really would be very cool. Yeah. And that game does look pretty neat and it looks like it looks beautiful. So be interested to check that out. That's all mm-hmm. we really have as far as news topics.
There was an Oculus Quest update, software update.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we talked about that last show. I'm pretty sure.
Did
yeah,
we?
Yeah, version 15, the new one coming out. Yeah. So they were
along
you
with like the Distinct Guardian. And
I don't
stuff?
Know. It's kind of. Maybe not. Maybe we didn't talk about it. I thought we might have, but maybe we didn't, right? So
there's a feature where you can double tap on the side of your Quest, and it puts you into the Guardian boundaries right away.
Yeah. Oh, all we really like, talked ding, about boom. Was the UI redesign. We didn't really get into how you could like double tap your headset, and it would bring through the real world, which is a really cool feature.
Update your Quest, people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're rolling it out. Yeah. So, you know, my Quest hasn't received it yet. I've checked manually, and you know, Oculus will push it to you when they push it to you. Just try to have your headset on, plugged in, and charging, and it'll it should update when the time comes.
Man, my Quest has been collecting dust, honestly. I have not spent a lot of time with it lately.
You know, I still use my Quest every day because it's so accessible, and I do a lot of video editing with it. Actually, I go into virtual desktop, and I do most of my video editing in there. using the Quest. So
I should try that.
Yeah, yep, just connect to your computer and do what you got to do.
Have you ever used virtual desktop, Dylan?
No, I'm curious about it, because I definitely think that the more we can kind of integrate the VR experience and the desktop experience and not force you to totally context switch between one and the other, the better off we'll be. What exactly does it offer you?
So it's a very low latency desktop, remote desktop solution, and with the key being low latency, right? So there's a few things that you can do. One being you can be playing a computer game, which is how I'm playing Doom Eternal, actually, is I connect with my Quest to my computer, and then I have an Xbox controller that connects to my Quest and passes through the input to my computer, right? And it's very low latency, so there's no, it's like you're sitting in front of the monitor. The big thing, though, that Oculus said no to is they were able to do wireless streaming of Steam VR and Oculus games, and Oculus came out and said nope. Turn that shit off, and now you have to sideload that version if you want that feature. But it is there, and it's really cool, right? That with SideQuest, the dude was able to put it on there for people that really that wanted it. So,
Well, and a lot of people swear by it. Like, really some good. People are playing Half-Life Alyx wirelessly with their Quest using virtual desktop and saying that it's amazeballs.
It is pretty good. It is pretty good. I found that I get really good frame rate with it usually, and very, very low latency, to the point where it almost always looks better than the link cable, right? The compression ratio isn't as high, so it just looks so good. But with Half-Life, it's the one game so far that I found that I drop frames with virtual desktop streaming it. So, yeah.
Is it both ways? Can you get your desktop in VR? Can you also get what's going on in VR in your desktop?
No, that would be more with the casting feature. You know what I mean? You can cast from the Quest to Chrome. There isn't a solution in that program to do that. But yeah, but what they do very well, and that's low latency desktop connections. To the point where you can play VR in it, which is pretty amazing. So
it's probably time that we shift into some of the meat and potatoes of this here. The conversation that really inspired us to invite Dylan back onto the show when we were in San Francisco revolved around the issue of privacy going forward in virtual space. And we've kind of touched on it a little bit in previous episodes of Between Realities, but we haven't really been able to take a deep dive. And I feel like the three of us all kind of bring a little something different to this conversation. So I'm excited to see kind of how this goes out. So really, do you want to kind of touch on maybe Skiva can start us off here, kind of touch on why privacy is such an important conversation to have right now?
So there's so many reasons, but we're currently in this world carrying around a lot of devices with us that record everything we do, everywhere we go, how long we've been there, what we're looking at, what we're buying, and now this is starting to come over to VR. But it's going to be a lot more. It's going to be a lot sketchier, I think, right? Because they're going to be recording your body movements, the way you talk, just your mannerisms. There's a lot of potential here for abuse, especially where we're coming up in the age of deepfakes. Right now, there was recently a deepfake update that allows you to do incredible deepfake with one image without having to know much about programming and pivot points and all this stuff, right? They've made it very easy now, right? So being able to replicate you and reproduce you is going to get so easy. And there's just so many potential ways for this to go wrong. And it's only because, there's companies backing this that want to profit, and they're profiting off of you. You're the product. That they're selling off. A lot of people, this latest generation coming up doesn't care that much about privacy because they were born into They were born into an age where everyone's giving their privacy away, just nonchalant. And everyone's thing is, well, you know, if I'm not doing anything wrong, why do I need privacy? And man, that, what I just feel like that's not a great way to look at it. But let's get some thoughts from, I don't know, whoever wants to talk next here.
Dylan.
Sure. Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I think it's we're in this kind of unfortunately twin aspects here, where on the one hand, people seem to be caring less and less about privacy, a lot of folks, and where it can be more and more disastrous to have privacy breaches and to have companies that have unlimited access to your information. I think there's two kind of twinfold approaches that need to happen here. I think one of them is just establishing both among consumers and among developers respect for privacy, right? I remember there's some paper or another that said people would be oftentimes willing to sell out not only their own data but also their friends' data for the price of a pizza.
Wow! Right? Yeah,
people just don't value privacy because, you know, if you think about it, it's the type of thing where it's not immediately obvious where, you know, privacy breaches happen and that leads to bad things in your life, right? It's this abstract concept with delayed consequences, and our human brains are very poor at understanding those. But we need to tell people and educate people that, hey, this can have really bad impacts at a societal level when it gets out of hand. Mm-hmm. So I think that's half of it. And the other half is we need stronger legal protections. Right now, the only incentive to companies to keep your data secure is basically their stock prices, is public backlash or damage that happens from it. There's practically no government guarantees that your data isn't being collected or that the data that is being collected is being stored safely. Europe has GDPR, which, you know, has its issues, but is miles better than anything we've got in this. I know Kent Bai likes the phrase surveillance capitalism state.
Yeah.
That we've got in the U.S.
Absolutely, man. Kent Bai is the man.
We love Ken Bai. I feel like we've said his name on every episode.
Oh, yeah. Well, I caught him I was in IEEE. He was on panel on ethics and privacy and mixed reality, I think.
Nice.
That we had with, it was run by Mozilla, who Mozilla, I think, has been doing a great job on privacy and those issues, by the way. You read a lot about Hubs, Mozilla Hubs, which is their kind of social VR platform. They've gone a long way to make sure that it's both open source so that you know what's being gathered and where it's going, and so that it's you know who's in a space. You have secure spaces that you don't have just somebody kind of some rando log into and set up a logger to record all of your motions. Mm-hmm. So I think supporting companies like that really respect your privacy, as opposed to some companies I could name, Facebook, that maybe are take the opposite approach, I think is really important.
You know, I find myself landing like kind of somewhere in the middle with like this whole thing, you know, because most of the time, like, I know that there is a very high potential for data to be abused, kind of like what Skiba was saying, you know, like it can be misused in these companies. And to Dylan's point, you know, there's like really no regulation, nothing that prevents these guys from just doing whatever the fuck they want with this stuff. But the world that we live in is like changing so crazily all the time, you know, and now we live in this world where like we have things like Uber, where somebody who you've never met in your fucking life rolls up in front of your house, you get in the back of their car, you know each other's names, and you drive off together, you know, like that's crazy shit, you know, like that's something that like they could have never fathomed in back in the day. Like, wait, you don't know him and you've never met him, yet you know each other and he knows where you live and he's picking you up? How, you know? So we're living in this world where like things are just like changing super rapidly, and we are making things more and more convenient, faster and easier to use, and much more accessible to people. But in order to achieve that stuff, they need information. Like, they need to know where you are relative to where that guy is in order to pull off the thing. And we all want the thing, you know? Like, we're begging for the thing. We're like, man, can't I walk into my house and say lights on and they fucking turn on? You know, but meanwhile, you have to have a speaker that listens to you 24/7 in order to pull that shit off. So I feel like I'm in this weird middle spot right now where, like, I do kind of understand the need to not worry so much about my own private information, because if we're all like rushing in this tidal wave to singularity and like total unification of consciousness, eventually everything doesn't matter anyway, you know? And I know I'm starting to sound like that person who you think is dangerous, Skiba, but it's like, you know, like, a part of me sees this as like an inevitable thing.
I think it's inevitable once we get to that level. We're not at that level though right now for that global, you know, unification, and to lose that once we're there, losing our privacy won't be a big deal, right? Because there won't be companies trying to capitalize off of us and eat us like we're a little snack, you know what I mean? Like, right. this is the problem right now, is we can do this in an ethical way. We really can. I believe that as long as the people, you know, as long as there's people there to say, hey guys, you know, let's not be douches. You know, why can't we just all not be douches?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, it's okay. Yeah. I understand that we have to get to that point. Right. But we don't have to just allow all of these companies to, you know, rape us for every bit of data that they can on our way. That's all.
Right. So. Yeah. And Alex, I hear what you're saying, but I think I would push back on a couple points.
Please.
I think the first is that there's definitely ways where we can still get all the convenience without sacrificing our privacy, right? Like, especially for VR, right? There's a lot of stuff where they're just piping in all of that biometric data that. Yeah, you know, arguably there's some arguments we made about, well, they can use it to make the service better, but we can architect those systems in ways that protect people's individual, you know, personally identifiable information while still giving you all of the benefits that you would have, right? You can have things like that smart speaker that you can architect that system in ways that it can still function, but it doesn't record all of that stuff and then let Amazon listen to it later, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's the first part. I think that the second part is, I think there should be a point when we do stop sacrificing privacy for convenience, right? I do think that that's a trade-off, and it's not always 100% in favor of convenience. I think there's a line where, you know, for example, on my laptop right now, I've got a little thing I can cover, right? I can cover up my webcam. Mm-hmm. And if I want to use it, well, yes, I have to slide that thing off. And that's a little bit of a loss in convenience, but it's a big gain in security because I know nobody's watching me when I don't want them to, right? Mm-hmm. I think in similar cases, you know, for Amazon and, you know, or not Amazon, but specifically, but any of these smart home things, right? You know, there's, in my mind, there's a point when, yes, I can come in and say lights on, or I can just come in and turn on the light switch and not risk having all of my private conversations be listened to. Right. Mm-hmm. Which is the risk right now. And that's just a risk that I personally am not willing to tolerate. Mm-hmm. But then the final thing I want to say, and then I'll give the table back, is looking forward towards that kind of transhumanist state. Right. There's, I know the idea that I would I would love to look forward to. I can't speak to the feasibility of it, but I would love to look forward to the day when, like, we aren't, you know, our meat bodies and meat brains are only a portion of who we are, right? And the digital apparatus that we can control is considered kind of part of us, right? I think once you get to that, data privacy and data protection becomes even more important. Then your data is you, and protecting it is a matter of life and death. Mm-hmm. There's a really great a great book called Accelerando that explores some of this stuff. And to spoil it a little bit, it gets to the point when, you know, we've got right now like algorithms for trading, for example, right, for trading stocks. It gets to the point, once it gets to the point where like entire corporations are algorithms, then it really is. It's not just a corporation like, you know, some algorithm snapping up your data. It's some algorithm snapping up you.
Right.
And so architecting the web and kind of just kind of our digital infrastructure to first and foremost protect people's data, I think is only going to get more important over time, even on that last exponential gain.
Well, those are all brilliant points. And I feel like a lot of that will like hold water for a little while, you know, but like, I start to think about, and here we go into the science fiction. I start to think about stuff like Minority Report, where like, you know, they can tell that you're going to have the thought, like they know, like, and I think that like theoretically, like that's actually true. Like the way that like it takes time for things to fire and stuff, like I'm pretty sure that that's measurable before anything actually comes out. So if that's the case, and like we all have VR that has brain interfacing and all of our intention can easily be read by each other, maybe not in the way that we do today, but you know, maybe in some other weird digital format that we're able to interpret feeling or thought or emotion, you know, like, would Minority Report be an ethical practice?
No.
No. I think that Minority Report is an example of what goes wrong when you don't have that data privacy, right? If you don't have that data privacy, then you get to those like thought crime, right? Then you get that Orwellian state where actually we're, you know, it's not even in the future. We're here now, right? There's countries where expressing dissent online is cause for you to be thrown into some gulag, right? I know there's a big in the spring, the Arab Spring, right? That's what it's called. Yeah. One of the things that happened during that is there was a Facebook page that was being used to organize resistance, and Facebook, because Facebook insisted that the person hosting the page use their real name and use identifiable information to host it, they were going to shut down this page unless one person became basically a political martyr and moved out of the country, never to be able to return until the regime was gone, because they couldn't post eponymously, right? They had to use their real information, and that meant that they would be then become a target for this regime who wanted to crack down on them. And so the idea of data privacy having a real life impact is something that's happened now, has already been happening.
Yeah.
And thought crime is real.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I don't see, I can't come to a place in my mind where I feel like any of this is okay, and it's mostly because it's all for profit and none of it is for helping, none of it is for anything good. You know what I mean? We're not collecting mm-hmm. people's data so we can be like, oh, let's find out, you know, if this person has this illness, how can we make it better? No, it's just because they want to sell stuff and they want to make money. And you're the consumer and your privacy doesn't matter. You know what I mean? And when inevitably that company that you trusted gets hacked, because they will, and your shit's all over the black market, you know, I mean, dude, you know, do you know how much it costs usually for like a pack of like 500 credit card numbers on the dark web? It's like $10. Like they don't even like, it's not like if my data was to be sold, it would even be expensive. You know what I mean? They're spitting this stuff out for peanuts, you know? And everyone's like, well, it doesn't matter because I have nothing to hide. You know, it just doesn't jive with me.
I guarantee you nobody who's had their identity stolen would say
right.
that.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And, yeah, and right. Do you want, you know, there's all this stuff, you know, like protecting people's identities. Well, you know, in insurance, you know, for if your identity gets stolen, your identity is getting stolen all the time. You know, everything you do, everything you look at, everything, everywhere you go, you know, that's all being stolen from you all the time, you know, and it's just that these companies aren't pretending to be you. They're just selling you. Anyway, I could rant on this for a million years. I don't know.
So Dylan, do you have thoughts on Facebook Horizons?
That is their new social platform.
Yeah, we're waiting on it to come out now.
I haven't heard much. I heard that like an alpha was launched recently.
Yeah, I guess there's some people in there, but I have no idea who.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the one hand, I will say that. You know, people are praising Half-Life Alyx as like VR's killer app. And I think it's certainly like in terms of quality, in terms of like the first AAA game in VR, I would say that's reasonable. But I think a killer app is something that keeps bringing people back to the platform, even once they, you know, Half-Life people are going to beat it, maybe beat it twice, maybe beat it three times, but eventually they set it down and go do something else, right?
Right.
I think social VR is going to be incredibly important to the future of VR as a technology, right?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, Facebook, for better or for worse, has done things to help connect people worldwide, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I am wary, you know, considering Facebook's history with this type of thing, that, you know, it could become a very popular VR platform. It could, you know, boost the VR from something that is, you know, kind of a fancy toy for playing one-off single-player games into something that's really fundamentally social, which I think is where a lot of the power of VR is.
Mm-hmm.
But I do worry about it becoming a tool for monetization of people's personal data, for spreading of fake news and other kind of clickbaity articles, for, you know, profitizing on people's social behaviors, right?
Mm-hmm. So is there anything that like that I can do or that you can do at home to like maybe prepare yourself for some of this? Like, what can we do as consumers to take more precaution, to be like more wary of what, you know, we're letting out there?
I mean, that's challenging. I think you know, when it comes to VR, there's very few solutions like that little like laptop thing that you can really use to protect yourself,
right?
Kind of physically, right? You have to be just wary in terms of, first of all, what applications you choose to use. You have to be wary of you know, when and where you're using VR, because if you augmented reality too. I actually wrote some about this, and but you know, scanning things, you have to be careful of where those scans are going, right? You have to be careful of where your cameras are pointing. But I think beyond that, knowing who's making the applications that you're using, and then also fundamentally pull on your, you know, if you live in the United States, you live in any democratic country, pull on your levers of power. Try to call your representatives and insist on privacy. You know, I think the Democrats, by and large, have a much better record on this than Republicans do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, vote blue, but don't just do that. Like, really try to contact your representatives or vote for representatives in primaries who will make respecting your privacy and forcing, you know, corporations to respect your privacy a fundamental part of their platform.
Mm-hmm.
That's really all you can do at this point.
Right. I mean, because here's mm-hmm. the issue that I see with like with Horizons and Rescue Toaster in the chats. Like, I'd be excited if it wasn't Facebook. I don't want minion memes in VR. I'll stick to VR chat. Like, that's hilarious. But like, the reason why VR minion memes are on Facebook is because that's where people are. And I can't help but feel, I mean, we'll see how it works out, but because it's going to have that Facebook name, I really do feel like Aunt Betsy is going to try VR for the first time because Facebook's on there now. Well, and she heard that you can use Facebook and actually feel like you're with people on Facebook.
Now, this is true. So let's look at it a little different, right? So Facebook is developing augmented reality right now, right? They've made that public. They have some AR stuff in the mix. So Facebook's, I think their main thing is, right, they're going to they want to get this stuff to a point where they're going to take in every bit of data possible. And the reason I say that is they need to record pretty much everyone's rooms, you know, all the office buildings. They're trying to compile a live map of the world for this stuff, right? So as far as privacy is concerned, what do you think about, you know, mapping out the world and every building in it? We have problems now with theft and people using these types of things in the wrong way. You know, pretty soon, every level of every house and every door and every room is going to be mapped on a Facebook server somewhere, right? Because as we're walking around with these augmented reality glasses, and that's what they want. So do you think this brings a new set of privacy concerns to the table, you know, as far as... is just everything being mapped in Facebook's control, right? I mean, let me throw this into the mix too. So Zuckerberg isn't the best, but he isn't the worst, right, with a lot of this stuff. What happens, they're a publicly traded company now, what happens when another company with a really, you know, very unethical person at the steering wheel comes up and says, hey, we're gonna buy you, and you have to sell it to us because it's going to benefit your shareholders. And then all of that data goes with them. You know what I mean? Now we have someone that has access to all of this data that maybe we don't trust as much as we trust Facebook. Not that we even trust Facebook at all, right? But there's just so many alleys that we can look at. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, Dylan?
Yeah, no, it opens up a humongous can of worms, especially, you know, augmented reality, being able to scan the world and build up 3D models of places. And we've already seen this to a certain extent in terms of cameras, right? Like, cameras are everywhere now. You could take right now, go in and take photos of somebody's house and put them on Google Maps.
Right.
We've seen.
I was getting ready to ask about Google layout. Because, yeah. Like, nobody asked me if they can take a picture of my backyard for Google Maps. You know, right. But I'm not pissed about it.
Well, and I think Google has it has channels that you can use to fight that type of thing, right? And that's something that people had to fight for. People had to sue Google over. And you know, even now, I'm not sure exactly what the extent of those protections are. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it varies from country to country as well. But I think we're about to have a whole new fight for that in augmented reality. You know, for me, my master's thesis at Berkeley was a project called Augmented Reality for Visually Impaired People. And part of the idea of that project was including the ability to scan buildings. You know, for example, let's say I'm walking around with my HoloLens on, right? Let's say I'm walking around an airport. And as I walk around, it scans and builds up a 3D model of this airport. That, you know, there's certain things I can do to, you know, for assisting a blind person wearing this. You know, we prototyped this whole system to help you find signs and kind of do text recognition. And you know, we thought of a lot of different ways, things that you could do just with the scans that your own device makes, right? And there are some privacy concerns there, but they're lesser because you can build it to keep all of that local. But as you start to, you know, let's say person A walks around and scans the airport, person B walks around on a different day and scans the airport, and person C and person D and person E, it's possible to build, if you're taking those scans out of the devices and putting them onto some type of constructed composite, it opens up a lot of really fantastic possibilities, you know, especially when it comes to accessibility. Once you let also the airport take that composite and say, okay, bathrooms are over here, restaurants are over here. Let's also hyperlink in the restaurant's menu so you can tell if it has things you can eat, right? Suddenly it opens up this whole world of possibility for, you know, because you have this 3D map that everybody can access. Now that is for a relatively public space like an airport. The trickier question comes when you start to scan semi-private and private spaces, right? Let's say I have a blind friend and, you know, this is 2030 and he's got a headset on that can scan the environment and use that to help him navigate around it. I shouldn't have to choose between, you know, saying to my friend, okay, you can come into my house, but you have to take off this headset that helps you like navigate and just move around the world. I shouldn't have to make them feel uncomfortable because they don't have access to their usual technology to explore, you know, my space. But on the flip side, if I let them in with that, I shouldn't have to be concerned that they are now scanning my face and adding it to my or my whole house and adding mm-hmm. it to the Facebook cloud, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think we need to make the distinction between when are these scans, when is this data going to stay on device, you know, and if they do upload it, then I can go to Facebook and say, you have to take this down right now. And when do you have it? Where do you have it such that we can all have these big composite maps that help us together make these new capabilities? Yeah. It's a very complex problem.
And, you know, and it really is a conversation that we need to have now. You know, Rescue Toaster in the chat's like, hold on, they're going that far, and like it's happening now. And it's like, dude, at OC6 there was these videos that they were showing, like basically showing like the future of what they're working on and stuff, and they had like rooms that they had scanned for to be viewed in VR that are in the real world, and they basically like put a camera in the middle of the place, takes a 360 shot of it, and like all of the assets in the room have three dimensions to them, like the fucking boots on the floor and like the chairs in the room, like everything is like built up like a real world. And it's happening right now. Like they are definitely getting that data, they're compiling it, and I can't help but feel like whoever it is that decides that this is important enough to gather the data, I'm sure that they think it's valuable enough data to keep. Like that's like a record of human existence, you know, like it's like, you know, like maps, for example. Like, do you think back in the day, like people were like chasing cartographers away because of their privacy rights?
Right. Well, I will say another interesting thing to note here is one of the differences between what we've had so far and what's to come is that when it comes to taking pictures and taking video, you're not generally, unless you're like specifically live streaming, right? You're not generally just walking around with a video camera on all the time, right? But for a lot of these augmented reality experiences, that's kind of what it takes in order to make them function. It needs to be recording your environment at all mm-hmm. times in order to make all of the things it's doing interact believably with that environment. Mm-hmm. So it's a combination of you're gathering more information, you're taking in not only the 2D camera, but 3D information and whatever else the sensors can pick up. And you're doing it all the time for things that normally wouldn't, you know, in the past have required that type of data gathering. So it's a big concern that we definitely need to start working on right now.
Right.
Like right
now.
Right.
So let me like, kick this. Let me right kick now. This a little further down the rabbit hole. Right. Facebook also acquired a brain interfacing company, right? Where you can wear this technology to control VR in your mind. This is something they're working on. You know, they talked about it at OC6. So if our concerns from this point are that Facebook is going to record everything, sell it off to the highest bidder, the hackers are going to come in, they're going to get everything, blah, 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 blah. What happens now when they start recording our brain stuff? When they start recording the way we think, what we like, what we dislike, you know, all the things that we think, right? I mean, we are now past the point of just recording our homes, recording small businesses and private places. We are now recording the minds and you know, and different things about people's brains. I feel like we do need to do this now. Because by that point, if we wait till that point, it's probably going to be too late, man. You know?
Yeah, dude. And, you know, that, like, really poses a lot of interesting stuff. Because right now, like, the way that we talk about data being exchanged and, like, information being exchanged, it is, like, very linear, you know? Like, it all kind of fits within, like, our understanding of the way that we communicate and the way that we share information. But if there's a device that's able to like read your brain and like it's going to know stuff that you don't know on a conscious level, you know, and it can be like, hey, like, you know, what do I need to find happiness? And they'll be like, sure, we'll tell you what you need to find happiness for $1,000
payments of $9.99.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So they'll be able to, like, we know you. We know you better than you. And if you're willing to pay for it, we can tell you what you need to do to accomplish whatever it is that you're trying to do.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's getting crazy, and I think now is the time to set a precedence, right? Right, and right now what's happening is the precedence is being set that nobody cares, you know, and we'll just do whatever because it's convenient. And, you know, I'm guilty too. I put on that Oculus Quest, and, you know, because it's awesome and there's no other competition. But like I've said before, once there is other competition that isn't recording my shit, I am gone, man. I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just not a good situation. I think people really have to understand that this shit goes into the future too. It's not just that they're going to be looking at what you're clicking on and what you're buying online. This is going to get to the point of brain interfacing. Everyone's working on brain interfacing. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's just the way it's going to go. So we got to nip this in the bud. That's all they
talked about in the fucking IGN Valve interview.
Yeah, Gabe Newell. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, I think again, it's the type of thing where it is multifaceted, because on the one hand, obviously from an accessibility standpoint, brain interfaces are amazing. You get people that are like full, you know, quadriplegic that can now, hopefully with brain interfacing, we'll be able to do things that they could never have dreamed of, you know, 10 years ago. But on the flip side, yeah, it's a more invasive form of than we've ever seen before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people look at this now and they say, oh, well, the brain interfacing, it barely works to like control things, let alone to read thoughts that you don't want it to. But it gets better and better and better really quickly, especially mm-hmm. as these things start to go into mainstream production. You put the deep learning algorithms to work on the millions of people's brain recordings that you've now got. And yeah, we find, again, it becomes incredibly important to safeguard that personal data, to make mm-hmm. sure that any data that is being collected is scrubbed clean of personal identifiers, which is even more tricky with a brain scan because mm-hmm. they are so kind of personal.
Right.
But you take those best practices. And here's another thing. You don't record everything and keep it forever. Good data privacy hygiene says only take what you need, the bare minimum of what you need, and only keep it for as long as you need it. And then delete that shit. Mm-hmm. Don't keep it floating around on your servers for years and years for somebody to eventually hack.
So right. So check this out. So I have an IT company. Right. And I know how backups work, right? When you delete something, you're not deleting it. It's out there in a backup. It's in a cloud backup. It's in a secure facility like Iron Mountain on, you know, different kinds of media. You're not going to be deleting things. So it's very important that now, as of now, we make it so the only things being recorded are the things that need to be. And like you were saying, and that all the private information of who that data belongs to is gone, right? And that's mm-hmm. that's important, and people need to, you know, see that that's important.
So I guess like right now we're really doing like what we should, and that is having the conversation, right. You know, like there's a lot of people out there who enjoy all these things and who, you know, maybe have a feeling one way or the other when it comes to privacy, but we're still not having the conversation and it's still not like top of mind. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to continue to have this conversation, and hopefully, you know, we'll inspire others to really think about this, and it'll be kind of be like, you know, that like, you know, the fire, it'll be like a fire, you know, like slowly grow. Sure. and kind of spread. And hopefully just by talking about it and like stimulating the conversation over and over and over again, we'll like start to enforce that this is something that's important. And maybe we can start to get some of our brilliant thinkers to devote some of their brain power into helping us find solutions. Because, you know, we can talk about this all we want, but at the end of the day, I'm not making this stuff, you know, like mm-hmm. I'm just sitting here talking about it, consuming cool video games and hanging out and having a good time, you know, but there's people out there who are actually making these decisions. And if you're listening, you know, there's people out there who are aware that this is something that's a very, very slippery slope. And, you know, we might end up fighting a whole different kind of war in the future than we ever even imagined, you know, like the war on your privacy and on who you are. And especially to Dylan's point, if you become data, like, then that's you, mm-hmm. you know? So this might not be a war that you fight with weapons, you know, this might be something that we need to think outside of the box to find a solution for.
Yeah.
And I mean, I would say, like, too, I do hope this conversation is encouraging people to you know, I'm sure there's a few people that will be listening to this and conversations like this and hopefully go out and become, like, legal advocates for privacy and, like, take, I know the Berklee School of Information, you know, just to plug my old alma mater, offers a great online degree to dive into a lot of this stuff and learn really the actual, like, code that you'd need to do to enshrine privacy. But I will say, for everybody else, keep the conversation going, sure, but vote with your dollars, vote with your time, and vote with your vote, right?
Right.
I know the quest right now, like you said, it's hard to compete with, but if you can, buy devices and buy applications that will respect your privacy. If you've got the time to spend on it, call your senators, call your representatives, and ask them what they're doing to protect your privacy. Mm-hmm. And then vote for people who will respect your privacy, and not just in general elections, but in primaries as well. You know, even if those candidates don't necessarily win, it's a signal to those in power that, hey, this is an issue people care about.
Right.
And that is what will hopefully get things changed.
Amen, dude. Yep. We're giving stuff away. We haven't even mentioned that. Yeah, do we have last week's giveaway winner? Is that a thing?
I do. Did I put it on here? Shoot, I think I forgot to put it on here. Let me see. So, yes, someone did win last week, and is more.
And I actually did want to mention, I did want to talk about this. I'm glad that I brought this up. Hey, I'm glad I brought that up, Nate, because I've been waiting for this code to go, and I can't believe it took this many episodes for it to get scooped up.
Yeah, Moss for Quest is what Emil Bang picked. He is the contest winner, which is pretty awesome because we like the name Emil. We got a very good friend named Emil who helps us with some of this stuff, which is great. So congratulations to Emil. And if you guys also want some free stuff as far as free VR games, accessories, stuff like that, go down into the description and grab the link to the latest giveaway and go ahead and enter and get some stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, we've got Pistol Whip is still in there. If you've managed to not buy Pistol Whip, you can get a copy of Pistol Whip. Rico's Fragments, we still have more codes of. I gotta do a freaking stream of Rico's Fragments, man. Like soon, like really soon. I'm gonna do that on my channel really soon. And like people can join in on their phones and play along while I'm walking through a haunted house. I honestly cannot wait to do this. So there's so many games I have to play. God damn. We have the Asterion controller covers, which no one's picked yet, and like that blows my mind too. Like, take those controller covers; they're so nice for the Oculus Quest.
Yeah, they really are.
And I have one more thing that I actually just found right before this podcast that I'll show off real quick. And this is a T-shirt that I got when I was at OC6, which is from Nreal. So this is a double XL Nreal T-shirt who make. Really badass AR glasses. They had an awesome awesome booth at CES, and I got some great footage there too, which one of these days I'll share with everyone. So we're going to go ahead and toss this T-shirt in the mix, and I think we have a Tesla suit shirt also that we can pop.
We got a Rico's Fragment shirt. We got a bunch of stuff we can throw on there, along with all of these games, you know, VR games. Who doesn't want free VR games as well? So, yeah, whether you want to look stylish or just stay at home and play some games, we got you covered. And I do think we're going to have to end this soon because as the sun is going down, the green box around Alex is growing thicker and thicker. the green screen is starting to come through.
Yeah, we're definitely there. Could you feel that I was like wrapping it up? Like, oh yeah, we're doing a giveaway. Our guest on this episode has been Dylan Fox. The UC Berklee alumni and master XR UI designer. And dude, it has been so awesome to have you on the show, man. Like, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. It's been a wonderful conversation. Thanks for having me, guys.
It was super awesome. I had a lot of fun, and I loved getting your perspective on a lot of this stuff. I'd love to have you back on maybe next season as well, because we didn't even really get into a lot of the stuff that you're doing for for disabled people. And I would love to hear about, how you're helping the blind through the use of augmented reality, which is pretty wild because I never thought about, like, you know, AR to me is something that you need to see to be able to really use, right? But to be able to take AR technology and help people navigate the world, I think is just absolutely amazing. So yeah, there's a lot of things that, you know, a lot of good conversations we can have next time. And thank you so much for coming on. It was really, really fun.
If anybody's trying to like learn more about this or, you know, kind of like get to know you better or anything like that, like where should they go? What's the best way to get in touch with you, Dylan?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at UsabilityFox. And I would also say check out the XR Access website at xraccess.org. There's a lot of, you know, we're trying to bring together all of the designers, developers, people in the corporate world, people in the academic world, people in the government world, to make sure that these technologies are accessible for everybody. So if that's something that interests you, you can join one of our working groups or just come check out our symposium in July.
Beautiful, man. Well, this has been episode 8 of Between Realities. Rescue Toaster says that we should give each other a high five before we sign off. I hope it lands.
All right.
Thank you guys for joining us. Special thanks to Rescue Toaster and Danny for joining us in the chat today. It's awesome having you guys there to contribute to the conversation. We will see you in 1 week for episode 9. Who's our guest next week?
Oh, geez. I don't even know. Who is our guest? I'm not even sure. It's going to be a great guest.
Well, it's a surprise.
It's a surprise
guest. It'll be somebody super cool. So tune in, subscribe to this shit, like it, leave a comment, do all that stuff. Thank you guys so much. We will see you next time.
See you later, everyone. Bye-bye.